Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a television show or season that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the TV series A Man on the Inside, Season 1. This was a Netflix show. It was, what, 8 episodes? Double-check that. I've already forgotten. Yes, 8 episodes. And it stars Ted Danson from Cheers, from The Good Place, Becker, numerous things. It is a mystery show. He is a retired professor who was hired by a PI who can't get access to the location of the case she's working on, but figures he can. Because he's 75, and it's in a retirement home. And there are aspects of the show that are comedic, but I hesitate to call this a comedy.
I would agree with that.
And I think that was a really smart move, because I think you could have taken the same premise. Say it was a movie instead of a TV show. Cast, say, Jim Carrey, and it's taking all place in the memory unit or something. And he's drooling or whatever. You know, it could be a broad comedy and be very, frankly, distasteful.
Well, if you set it in the memory care unit, you would almost run the risk of having a Groundhog Day style movie.
Yeah.
Where you keep reliving the same day.
That actually would make for very interesting. If you've got somebody in a retirement home trying to solve a case, as they're starting, they're slipping and not realizing they're, that would be wild. What I really enjoyed about this is the mystery aspect was fun. It was lighthearted where it needed to be, but it was heavy in some places.
Yeah.
There was one episode where it starts with one of the workers at the facility going to the lead person and just saying, room, whatever. And you could see it was a somber moment kind of a thing. It's like, oh, somebody died. And this was like 4 episodes in or something like that. So we'd gotten to know the character that died.
Yeah.
And the impact it has on everybody and stuff like that.
Well, and they played fair with the, they can't just tell the residents when the ambulance takes the person away. Because there's a protocol. There's a procedure. You have to notify next of kin. You have to go through all of that before the memorial service is announced.
And HIPAA regulations and stuff like that. You can't share somebody else's medical things. I mean, there's a lot of procedural aspects that on the surface seem kind of cruel and callous, but they are there for a reason.
Yeah.
And I really do think there could be a very fascinating, almost documentary series on how some of those things came to be. Like, for instance, whenever you're watching a news report and it's kind of names withheld, they haven't been released yet. The origin of that we're aware of because here where we live in Texas, back in, what, the 60s was the tower shooting?
Yeah.
Guy gets up on the University of Texas tower with rifle, other armaments, and starts shooting and killing people.
Yeah.
It gets covered, unsurprisingly, by the local news station. Now, at that point, the news station was 10 blocks away? 12 blocks? I mean, not far.
Mm-hmm.
And Austin's not a huge town now. It was smaller then. Anyways, they're covering it. Anchor is on the air. And this was back again in the 60s. So it's not he's getting something in his ear. Somebody's handing him pieces of paper, written up list, and he's reading off the names.
Well, this is the era of Walter Cronkite. So the anchormen are the mature grandfatherly figures.
The authority figures that you trust.
Right. And what the station had done was they had a person at stationed at basically at a payphone at the hospital. And as the ambulances were bringing people in, they would see who was on the gurney. And in many cases, they recognized the people on the gurneys as friends. They would dial up the station and just rattle off a few more names. Those names were written on index cards and then handed to the anchor live on the air. And he would just grab the next index card and read it off. And in many cases, again, because it was a smaller town at the time, and this man was a father, a grandfather, he knew some of the names.
He knew family members, if not the person in question, kind of a deal.
Yeah. and he got to one name, and he choked up for a moment, and then he said, "And my grandson," and read his grandson's name, and that was how he found out.
And that's the sort of thing that leads to various protocols like withhold the names till the next of kin have been alerted, because that's a horrible way to find out.
Yeah. And I mean, the station encouraged him to go home, get off the air, but at the time, he felt that the news needed to be reported, people needed the information.
And that's the crux of situations, like again was in the show, of a resident dies.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to find out, but there's a right way and a wrong way to inform them.
Mm-hmm.
And how you judge what's right and wrong is not just what's right and wrong for them, but for the person who died, the family members, the facility. It's so nuanced. And I really appreciated how the show didn't just treat it for laughs, didn't gloss over that.
And they really embraced how the people who work there are part of the community. They care about the people. I think Jalen actually had one of the best scenes for that. When he went to Dee Dee and said, basically, "I don't want to drive one of the residents for their weekly errand."
He's been diagnosed with cancer. He wants to go get cigars or whatever. And basically, he doesn't say, "I think it's going to kill him," but it doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And Dee Dee, the head of the facility, says, "Well, I'll take him this week."
Mm-hmm.
And they did a good job, certainly with the residents, establishing that community. To a lesser degree, because we didn't see as much of it, we do see the community of the people who work there and how they interact, how what impacts one impacts the other and such. And it would have been so easy to do a sitcom take on this. And they dealt with the impact of dementia and Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Denson's character, his wife had suffered from that. And when he's touring the facility and it's, "Oh, here's the neighborhood." And that's their memory care unit, and it's kind of off behind closed doors. We get some of the backstory there when one of the people we've gotten to know in the cast moves in there and stuff. Even before then, people are starting to pull back because they see it coming.
Yeah.
And just kind of the societal aspects of it.
Yeah.
So there was a very nuanced and it felt very informed aspect of the writing on this.
Yes.
That I absolutely was not expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't take away from the mystery or the comedic aspects at all. In some ways, it enhanced them.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one where we got to that final episode. The penultimate one ended on the, basically, this is how it's going to be done. Let me explain sort of a moment.
The, aha, I figured it out. Why didn't I see it sooner?
Well, we get past that to the point of, and let me explain.
Yeah.
We literally get to the equivalent of the parlor room scene of a Victorian era murder mystery where let's gather everybody together and explain it all. We get to the final episode where it's going to explain, but before watching it, it's like, okay, I had my theory. I thought it was either this character's son or that character's son. And you're like, no, it's this character and here's why. And I'm like, damn, that makes sense. It fits the show. It checks all the boxes for a satisfying ending.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of those was the way it went. But it worked for how it went.
Yeah.
And made for, I don't say all the more tragic of a story almost.
Yeah.
But they did a resolution of the story that you could not have done without a nuanced portrayal of what's it like for the people in here? What are the pros, the cons, the ups, the downs?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that many facilities like this have an open bar.
That was funny. I'm sorry.
But even that got downplayed later.
Yeah.
So it was well cast. You had pulled up, or did you pull up or did you create the spreadsheet?
I created with the help of AI.
You created a spreadsheet that had, for all of the key cast members, how long had they been acting?
Yeah.
And?
Because the thing about retirement homes is, because like we used to go visit our grandparents in one. And as you get to know their fellow residents, it's just kind of mind-boggling. The life experiences of these people, the jobs they had, the things they've done, and they were capturing that in a few different ways here. Well, like Calbert, who had run the cafeteria at the Pentagon.
Yeah.
So he had a fun way of saying what he used to do for a living. But right from the start, I was recognizing faces in the cast.
Sally Struthers.
Yes.
Who's been doing comedy, according to your spreadsheet, 55 years. I mean, all in the family and probably before then.
Yeah, All in the Family. I actually went to a taping of 9 to 5 when she did that sitcom.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, they had a great cast. A lot of them were, in some cases, familiar faces, even if you couldn't place them.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one who played Elliot,
mm-hmm.
we'd seen in a number of things. He was in Timeless.
Yes.
Among other things.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've got people who've been doing this 50 plus years, in some cases, one of them had been acting as long as, 67 years?
Yeah, Veronica Cartwright. I mean, she was a child actress on Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah. What I thought would have been funny, and I don't know that you would have been able to get this information. Ted Danson's character has a daughter. That daughter has three boys. Not entirely sure the ages, but I'm going to say young teens.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, of the youngest of them, how old is his parents and how old is his grandparents?
Yeah.
Because some of these people have been acting longer than his grandparents may have been around.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of funny.
I think one of the most hilarious scenes of all the episodes, in part because those poor teenage boys were clearly trying not to laugh. And I have to think the actor who was playing their father either was ad-libbing or those poor boys hadn't been shown the full script before, it was when the parents are trying to figure out how all three boys ended up with broken bones on the same day.
Yeah, I thought that was a great scene.
Oh, it was priceless.
The actor who plays the father there, Eugene Cordero, he was a recurring character in The Good Place.
Mm-hmm.
He was the voice of one of the leads in Star Trek Lower Decks.
Mm-hmm.
A very talented guy, very well used here. But I don't know that there was any cast member that I thought wasn't well used. I particularly enjoyed Calbert Graham, who was played by Stephen McKinley Henderson.
Yeah, and he played a judge recurringly throughout the whole Law & Order franchise, because I was trying to figure out why he was a familiar face.
Yeah, I'm sure he's done other stuff we've seen.
He knocked this part out of the park.
Yeah, he was just eminently likable, which, as the guy who becomes the best friend of Charles, the lead character, you gotta have that.
But he started out as the presumably grumpy loner.
Yes.
The guy who'd rather read the book than have a conversation.
Yes. And he played that without being grumpy,
mm-hmm.
but having the just leave me alone,
mm-hmm.
kind of almost I'm here to do my time.
Yes. Yes.
He did a terrific job. And then later in the season, when he's starting to needle Charles on a couple of things,
mm-hmm.
the back and forth between those two, just beautiful.
And they had a great episode about, don't show me the city you think I want to see. Show me your hometown.
Show me your city through your eyes. What do you find interesting?
Yeah.
And there was even some payoff on a little of that later. The acting was terrific. They were given really good material.
Mm-hmm.
They seemed to really understand the material.
Okay, so this show, we noticed in the closing credits, pretty late in the run, actually, I picked up on.
Yeah.
Was inspired by, it turns out, a documentary from Chile that went up for an Academy Award, which is how it got people's attention. And the article I saw said Ted Danson watched it multiple times just to really pick up on, okay, where was the magic in it, if you will?
Mm-hmm.
I want to say the title translated to The Mole Agent, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. But on the surface, the documentary is about an 83-year-old man in Chile who goes undercover in a care facility to figure out if elder abuse is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But what intrigued me about it is the documentary doesn't actually reveal whether or not elder abuse happened, because the 83-year-old got so interested in the people he was meeting in the care facility. And that seems to be what the documentary came to be about, was what he truly discovered in the facility.
Is more or less what happens here. The solving of the mystery is front and center the whole time, but also incidental almost.
Yeah. And I think they really captured the spirit of that real man's journey.
Yeah. Now, The creator of the show, Michael Schur, is the same guy who created The Good Place. And I think that is a brilliant show on ethics.
Mm.
It's a flat-out comedy. But to do a very entertaining and educational sitcom on ethics,
yeah,
for four seasons, that's a neat trick. And pulled it off beautifully. And I thought it was the same guy. But getting that confirmed and stuff, it makes sense. Because when you've got something that in the wrong hands could just be a train wreck.
Mm.
Again, I could see this basic premise as a high comedy, you know, movie or something.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, it would be funny, but it could be disgusting. And it certainly would be disrespectful to the elderly.
Yes.
Whereas here, they were treated not with kid gloves, but with sincerity, respect, and reverence.
Well, and the relationships between the generations were really explored.
Mm-hmm. Well, even if some of them were only touched on, like when the daughter tells one of her boys, hey, can you go take this out? And you see the kid basically brush it off till the youngest brother comes and has him do it kind of thing.
Yep.
Seeing the generation kind of stuck in the middle with the kids, with the parent and all that, it was interesting. And most of what we see is in the care facility in San Francisco, as downtown-ish, not downtown, but you know what I mean, central San Francisco. But we get out of the city enough to see the PI's office, a couple of bars, restaurants. We really go to town, literally, on the scene where they spend the day out and touring. I thought that was a lot of fun.
The company car was hilarious.
Yes, yes. There were a few things where it's not that they had the red herrings or the false leads or any of that stuff. The mystery kept going, but it was entertaining just to be watching what was happening that I wasn't, not that I ever do, I wasn't really trying to piece together the whodunit.
Mm-hmm. And there were times when Charles needed a break.
There was one scene where we see him putting away the recorder, the camera glasses, everything.
Yeah.
Including his little pocket square that he'd made a big to-do to the PI of, you know, this is Spy Charles. And she's like, you realize the whole time you're here, you're a spy.
But
the pocket square was to differentiate regular Charles from Spy Charles. Even that comes out.
Yep.
And he goes, has a nice game of backgammon with Colbert.
Yeah.
And it was a very simple way to kind of literally show us he's off the clock right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a really good balance between the sincerity of the writing, the acting, the characters, the comedy, the tragedy just inherently in getting old, losing your memory, all of those things.
Elliot had a good scene with along the lines of you're being affected by these things because it's your first month here. But the longer you're here, the more you're going to get used to all the transitions that happen.
Well, in his comment of this is your first time dealing with the memory loss. And he's like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of a realization and stuff. And there was just some of it that gets carried by the acting.
Mm-hmm.
Was beautifully done.
Well, and Elliot recognizing that it almost should be easier your second time if your first time was in the house with you.
Yeah, yeah. I am curious on the backstory for this season, writing-wise, who in the writing room had, and it may have been all of them, none of them, but at least one of them, it couldn't have been none of them, somebody in their family with dementia, Alzheimer's, or had worked in a care facility.
Somebody was definitely familiar with care facilities and how they operate, the calendar of what's going on, the activities, the painting classes, and things like that.
And I don't think it's necessarily, I was going to say, unique, novel experience. It's something either you have or you don't. And our grandparents were in a retirement home for quite some time because they got in reasonably early.
Yeah. They moved in when our grandmother was 65.
Yeah. And they lived into their 90s. So we had plenty of opportunity there. But there are certain things. There's almost a look to the activity calendar. There are certain things they're going to have.
Well, I think a lot of people who don't have a firsthand experience with it think that the activities are busy work, if you will. Whereas when you've had the firsthand experience, you become aware that there really is an enrichment aspect to it.
Yeah, yeah.
there's a, they don't want you to lose it, they want you to use it.
Definitely there's the lose it or use it. There's also something to differentiate the days.
Yes.
Something to talk about at dinner with your friends. Mm-hmm. I did this, you did that, whatever.
The one thing I never felt we saw in this, and I know our grandparents used to comment on it like crazy, was, and it depended, I feel, it depends where you are in the country, but either Saturday or Sunday was kind of a traditional visiting day at the home.
Yeah.
And where our grandparents were, it was Sunday. After church, the families would swing by and see elders. The
grandparents, yep.
Yeah. And there was no indication that anyone in this home had a weekly visitor or anything like that. And there was a point when we could almost anticipate, based on what had been in the news, yep, this week we're going to get a call Sunday afternoon because everybody at the home is going to be talking about it. Our grandparents will have heard about it and they'll want to call and check in with Dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, 9/11.
Yeah.
I got a call from our grandparents the Sunday after.
Well, and it was funny because they didn't know if you knew and didn't want to alarm you if you didn't.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. No, there are certain things that once you've been through that kind of experience with your parents, your grandparents, one or two people I've known have done it with their great-grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky to have that opportunity. Not that they would have considered it that because they'd be too young to appreciate it. Anyways, that colored the creation of this season.
Yeah.
In a really beautiful way.
Mm-hmm.
Even to the point where they showed the toll this can take on the workers. When Dee Dee, the head of the facility, we would see her, she would be literally under her desk, staring at the bottom of her desk, where she had put up a picture of one of the residents.
Yeah.
Don't know how often she changed which residents or whatever. But she had headphones on, it was playing calming wave noise, just to give her the white noise, just the mental escape she needed.
Yeah.
Because that's got to be a tough job.
Yes.
And to convey that for a character that for a good part of the season is one of the lead suspects.
Mm-hmm.
Really well done. I was impressed with how they really walked that line of, we can get some jokes out of some of this, but some of this, no, we're not even going to try because it's not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So, again, I was impressed by the writing, the cast. The facility looked as I would expect one to look.
Yeah.
So, I'm curious what they're going to do for a second season. I appreciated at the end of the season that they basically kicked it off with the PI getting another case. It's a month later. Charles would be right for it.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls and hires him, but we don't know what the case is.
Yeah.
So, establishing, yep, there's another one. Yep, they're going to work together. Yep, she's going to be back in it.
Mm-hmm.
But not locking themselves into any particular thing.
Yeah.
And I also really enjoyed how the Here's Who Done It was the beginning of the final episode.
Yeah.
And there was some meat in the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
That resolved a couple of other issues that really showed how the experience changed Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just, oh, here's an epilogue, they live happily ever after, whatever.
Yeah.
So that was a very interesting decision because I think a lot of shows would have had the penultimate episode end with the aha moment. And then about a halfway through, we get the Here's Who Done It.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious if they can do as well on a second season.
Well, and I liked how the Here's Who Did It played out. It was a very kind moment.
Well, when they're prepping for it, and Charles is like, I need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll go better if I am, and it does. And
yeah.
Yeah. There was some real subtlety to some of the stuff.
Yeah.
And again, a care and attention, which really fits. It's in a rest home and that sort of a thing. So I think the vibe of the writing fit the vibe of the setting.
Yes.
And it wasn't a breakneck pace or any aha, I figured out, or big dramatic moments or anything like that, because that's not the setting.
Yeah.
Now, if they switch to a different kind of a setting, maybe that facilitates a different kind of a story. I don't know.
That'll be interesting.
But
they did make it clear Charles burned his bridges here.
Yes. Yes, he did. And seeing how that played out, too, was fun.
Yeah.
Out of these characters, Charles, the PI, are clearly continuing. The PI's secretary, that is a background character.
Yeah.
Will probably be there. I would expect Charles's daughter, son-in-law, and their three boys would show up. I'm really hoping Calvert shows up again.
Me too. I'd like to.
It would be a mistake if he doesn't. And the way I would be tempted to use him would be the Charles goes and has coffee with him to talk about the case, to get a second opinion, and the guy almost playing Watson.
Yeah.
Or going undercover as a decoy assistant or whatever.
That'd be funny.
So I see a ton of potential. And Ted Danson, again, forever on Cheers.
Yeah.
I forget how long Becker ran.
Yeah.
4 really solid seasons of The Good Place.
Did some CSI.
Ton of movies.
Yeah.
Very talented. Hasn't lost his step in his game at all.
Totally agree. There were moments I was just dying of laughter.
Yeah.
The gardening, photography, painting club.
Yeah, when he gets kind of the muddle, making it up and going along and it's not going well, you can see the character trying to grasp of what his story is going to be, and the expression on his face when he realizes that was the wrong thing.
Yes, yes.
And some of that was a ton of fun. So I'm glad he's doing this. I'm glad Michael Shear's the guy behind the scenes driving this.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a ton of faith in him based on The Good Place, and I'm really excited to see where it goes for second season.
Me too. I'm glad you found this.
Yeah. Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, form, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayall. And thanks again for listening.